Hi, Fiora. How are you this week?
Hi, Joe. I'm doing really good. How are you?
I am great. How is the move going?
I'm done. So now it's just organizing. So
okay. All right. Which you're kind of like good at that, right? Because isn't
yes.
I have in your job.
Yes, I have two kids' rooms done and two more to go. So I'm good. I'm okay.
Excellent. I don't have anything exciting to share this week in my personal life, but we have some cool classes coming up.
Yeah. So this weekend, actually, we have Shadow Work 101 that I'm leading for the first time. And I'm really excited just because I've already been teaching people how to do shadow work. So I'm like, oh, let's pull together a class and really you structure it a little bit more then.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to just participate in it and be in a class that I'm not teaching and just be a student. You know, I love to be a student as well. So,
yeah. So we have several classes coming up. So in the month of May, we have Shadow Work 101 and then Shadow Work 102, which is Money Mindset, Shadow Work 103, Manifestation, and then Cut and Release, Cords of Attachment and Past Life Vows.
Yep.
And your life path number aligning with your soul blueprint. And those last two are yours, right, Joe?
Yep, I'm teaching. So Cut and Release is sort of going to get deeper into some topics that we're going to talk about today. And then the life path number, that is sort of like one of my passions, is helping people, you know, identify their life path number and then what they are, sort of, you know, what their purpose is or their path. And so we're going to talk about that and we're going to get into all of the numbers. It's going to be a really cool class.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for all of these. So you can find the dates in the descriptions and registration links if you just go on to thewokeakashic.com, or you can join our Facebook group to make sure you're involved and you can see everything pops up. And our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/thewokeakashic.
Yes. okay, so today we are going to talk about ancestral trauma and some pretty cool soul retrieval modalities to help clear that trauma. I am so excited about today.
Yeah, me too. Ancestral healing and the topic of ancestral trauma is actually what really pushed me off the cliff of my spiritual journey. I think throughout, you know, my life, I've been like inched forward. And then it wasn't until I went to a tarot reader and I was going through a very difficult time in my life and I just felt like I needed some clarity. And she's like, you have ancestral trauma that essentially like keeps you stuck where you're at. And she at the time she offered me, she's like, we can do these limpias, which is just Spanish for cleansings. And she's like, but you don't have to do them with me. Though I do offer them. So that's usually a pretty good sign of someone that has good intentions. But in that moment I realized like, no, like I'd always worked, I've always been around, curanderismo and even Santeria and in different things since I was a child. So I knew that when things are wrong in your life, you have to fix them, especially in like that spiritual realm. Mm-hmm. I already saw my parents do the egg limpias and do like the baths, the baños and all these different things. I saw my parents, you know, as I grew up doing these things. So I knew that these were things that I could do, but also that I should do. So anyway, so I essentially just went online and I just researched ancestral healing and trauma. And part of what came up for me was I found a person who does soul retrievals and she wrote several books. Her name is Erica Buenaflor. And she's a curandera and she's learned from different Mesoamerican Peruvian, different modalities. And she's actually written several books.
Can you tell our listeners what a curandera is? Did I say it right?
So a curandera is essentially a light worker, a healer. They're
Beautiful.
It's literally a healer. Curando or to curar. The word curar is healer. So they're a curar. Healer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The core word of curanderismo, curar, is means healer.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah. So I actually ended up buying her book, which is Curanderismo and Soul Retrieval. And then in the book, she goes into all the methods of teaching you how to go back in and through trance journeying, through breath work. It's just a really great, it's actually not a big book.
It's not that big.
Yeah, but it's very thorough.
Is it an easy read?
Yes. Where cool. I've read other books that I kind of fall asleep on. Because it's your brain like shutting down because it's too much information. Yep. Not like I'm not calling anyone boring, but it's like sometimes it's too much information and your brain's like shutting down. Compute. And her books are not that way. They're concise, but also... they get the message across very easily and they're very easy to read. So I really appreciate the work that she does. So on the soul retrieval part of it, the belief is that when you go through a traumatic event in your life, and I'm sure like a lot of us have experienced this, we just don't know what it's called. It's when you go through a traumatic event, sometimes you almost feel like your soul leaves your body. Like I know I felt this a couple times, like when I fall. Like when I fall, it's like I'm watching my body fall before I fall.
Yep.
It's kind of the same idea. I know many stories of women when they're going through some kind of like sexual assault.
They disassociate.
Their bodies. Yep. It's like your soul leaves your body and it's almost like you're not there and you're watching this thing happen to you. Mm-hmm. So what is happening in that moment is that essentially it's a piece of your soul that's being lost in this moment. Mm-hmm. So what soul retrieval is the process of going back and searching for these lost pieces and bringing them back to you. And that's essentially the healing.
It's beautiful too. The concept is beautiful. Bringing a piece lost back to yourself, bringing it back home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Have you ever had a soul retrieval or has the book taught you to do it on your own?
Yeah. So after I bought the book, actually, like I looked more into Erica and I found out that she was in LA. So I'm like, well, like she's not that far from me. So I ended up booking a session, a one-on-one session with her. And I did see her personally and we had a soul retrieval session. And in the session, I personally didn't see anything, but what she saw, she told me what she saw. And there's no way she would have known what she saw, like, you know, other than high, you know, divine knowledge. Mm-hmm. And she told me, you know, this part of you at this time in your life is the part that came up and she's not ready to return back to you yet. You know, you have work to do, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that's, like I said, that's basically like that was like my jumping off point. Like that was me jumping off the cliff and taking a leap of faith and then all the work that I did subsequent to that. And then I did have a follow-up soul retrieval session with her several months later. And then at that time, the soul piece did come back to me. And yeah, it was beautiful.
So when it came back to you, what was the feeling, the emotion?
I just felt like this immense feeling of gratitude and I just felt complete. I knew already because of the work that I had put in that I was ready, that piece of me was ready, because I just knew how much I had grown just mentally, spiritually, just, I was just ready. I was ready to not carry things around as a burden anymore and just be my whole entire self.
Yeah, that's really, really beautiful. Now, okay, so explain the ancestral part of it, right? Because I've mentioned this before where I struggle with that because my belief is in reincarnation and that we don't reincarnate in the same situation or family every single time. So ancestral
Ancestral trauma.
Yes.
So that's, I guess that's different. It's different for everyone where it's like what we talked about last week, where some of it is our DNA, right? Some of it can be explained through that DNA process of inherited trauma, through epigenetics. But so that is part of it. I actually had, like, for me, something came up during a meditation once, and this is what I consider to be an ancestral trauma. During a meditation, I had this flashback, I guess you'd call it, where I was a woman and I was a Native woman in a tribe, and I was in love with this man. And in this moment, I remember feeling like I loved him and I wanted to be with him. And he was somehow my partner in a way, but he wouldn't stay with me. Like, it was one of these things where, like, he was with other women. And I don't know if that's like the norm, like, I'm guessing, but there was this like pain that I felt because she longed to be with this person, but she couldn't get them to stay. And so for me, like, that was something that I knew it's not mine. Like, that's not my personal experience that, you know, but it's something that I, after that came through, I felt it, and I had to allow myself to feel it all the way through, and also to give her, to send her love, and to forgive, just to forgive the situation, and to just not hold on to it, and just allowing yourself to just feel it all the way through. Because I feel sometimes when you try to suppress things, that's really when it gets worse or it doesn't help the situation. So that's part of ancestral trauma. It can come up in those ways as well. But the actual scientific research has been done on, like, the Holocaust survivors and people who went through famines, people who are survivors of other, like, mass genocides or other, you know, historically very significant to probably deadly traumatic events. So that's carried over to us, you know, to an extent, but obviously not everybody.
Yeah, but you know what? So it's interesting because when you started talking about that, I got an intuitive hit. Spirit told me, they said, DNA is the carrier. That's exactly what I heard when you were talking. They said DNA is the carrier. So that's, for all of you listening, that's sort of what happens when I get a hit. I just hear things inside my head. That's my clairaudience. And a lot of times if I don't understand something, Spirit will just give me a little phrase to help clarify it for me. So that's kind of cool. DNA is the carrier, they said. So,
which makes sense because we talk about our bodies being a vessel.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So that's how it's carried forth. Yeah. All right. So now I can finally put that to rest, like fairies, and stop not believing in it. Well, and for me, ancestral trauma, I liken it to, in the Akashic perspective, I liken it to past life vows and cords of attachment. And so, you know, for vows, for instance, I mean, past life vows, there are so many ways that you could have created those.
Are those always romantic, or how does that work?
So, okay. So basically, during past lives, we have many different roles, right? Mm-hmm. And so any beliefs and fears or vows or promises that we made in those lives carries forward, and it's still active in your subconscious. But it's active in your subconscious because it's active in your etheric field. So much like the DNA is the carrier, your etheric field is also the carrier. Okay. And so these agreements are made, and I'll tell you how and why, but they're made so strongly that they can overwrite anything that we consciously attempt to create, and it can block us from things like health, wealth, happiness.
I see. Okay.
So 90% of what we attract comes from the beliefs that we hold at the subconscious level. And only 10% comes from our conscious thoughts, right? Yeah. All right, so a vow becomes this deeply held subconscious belief that mm-hmm. becomes the 90% of that we are reality that we experience. Okay. Uh-huh. All right. So what are these vows? How do they create it? So spiritual vows are basically a vow of chastity, like that, where you might create relationship difficulties when we believe that we have to choose either a vocation or a relationship, right? Like a priest. He can't be a priest and have a family.
A wife.
Mm-hmm. A wife, yes. And so you might take a vow of chastity when you believe that you can't have both. Okay.
Okay.
A vow of obedience, basically that might cause you fear of using your personal power in this life.
Okay.
A vow of silence, that might cause a fear of, like creative expression or expressing yourself in the past that may have resulted in death. So a lot of times that's what happened. A lot of times when people express themselves like as healers, they were put to death. And I have a really interesting examples of that. But then, the one that everybody is like, did I make a vow of poverty? I must have made a vow of poverty, right? Because it like creates this feeling of guilt or fear in relation to creating, financial wealth.
Okay.
A lot of people have that, and that's, why manifestation is such an issue for people. But then here's another interesting one is called the vow of death before dishonor. And this one is the most interesting to me because it's what causes people to have an inability to leave like an unhappy relationship or a job that is really deeply unfulfilling or even dangerous because, they've created this vow of death before dishonor. It's like, I will die before I, divorce or die before I leave this person or die before I bring any dishonor on myself or my family or whatever.
That explains so many murders.
Many murders, suicides, death before dishonor. Seriously. So those vows are they're subconscious and they're held, at the deepest levels. And they gotta go. They have to go.
I've had so many, it's so crazy. I've listened to so many stories like that. A famous one, Phil Hartman's wife.
Right? I know. I love that story. Is like, what?
It's like, why don't you just leave the guy?
I know. And I loved Phil Hartman too. I was a little pissed because News Radio was one of my favorite shows.
That there's so many stories like that where it's like, dude, just leave her or leave him. Why'd you have to kill him? Like, that's what? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, okay. That explains a lot.
Mm-hmm. I know. Okay, so here's some cool examples that I have of vows. Okay, so in the past, people that were called to the healer's path, they had to practice away from mainstream society, right? They couldn't be out in the open because they wanted to avoid persecution and execution for like all of their healing knowledge and abilities. Mm-hmm. And so this may have meant that most of their life was spent in both servitude and fear. And so making that sacred vow kept us safe and it helped us survive, but in this life, we don't have to make that in this life, but there are a lot of people, like especially empaths and sensitives and that I work with for intuitive development, they're so afraid of what they're opening up to. And it's like, I don't want people to know I'm not out in the open. I'm not, I don't let people know that I'm intuitive or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's all because of that fear of what people will say or how it will impact their career or, all of that.
Okay. Because I have a friend who has very clear abilities to see mm-hmm. spirit, but he doesn't want to develop anything or really open up to it because he says that he feels like he naturally goes into the dark stuff and he's afraid of bringing any dark things into his life.
That's interesting. I mean, that's sort of a twofold session. He'd need to, really learn what it is you're tapping into, which is not the dark. It's very, 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 it's not a thing. Like you can call it forth, but I don't know. I don't do that. Mm-mm. But then he would also need to tap into, like, actually looking and see, do you have a past life vow? What did your past lives? A lot of times they're showing me an image of a wizard. So if he's at all drawn to like wizards or wizardry or anything like that, it might be a really cool clue that that's actually what. And this is just symbolic in my interpretation too. It can be any priest or magical or any sort of conjurer where there was a negative sort of outcome because of it. It, right. It happened all the time.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
The Salem witch trials, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so now in related to religion, being in service to others often required people to make a vow to relinquish all of their earthly possessions, right? Like people that would, like monks, people that would go into, you know, into what are the buildings called where monks and nuns and
monastery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they would have to, you know, or undergo some sort of suffering in order to be closer to God, which, you know, that's.
That reminds me of that that guy in
that Tom Hanks movie.
The Tom Hanks movie. Yes. Yeah. And he like gives himself
yes. No, in order to be closer to God, in order to feel closer to God. Listen, that's some full frontal bullshit right there is what that is. But.
God loves you if you're, you know,
I know
not chastising yourself. That's crazy.
He's probably going, what the hell are you doing, dude? knock that shit off. All right, so historically, here's another example. It hasn't always been beneficial. Oh, this is my favorite one. It hasn't always been beneficial to be wealthy. What?
Oh.
Because money often removed a lot of the freedoms that we have now, right? The freedoms that we have today. And it put people at risk because if you were wealthy, you could be killed for it. You could be kidnapped for it. You could be abducted, which is the same thing as being kidnapped.
Yeah.
But it put you, and I just thought, wow, like that's amazing. And so that was one that came up in my research, but it was also one that came up when I did a vow removal from somebody. And I remember that it was a female and she was like this young girl. Mm-hmm. And it was back in like, I don't know, it felt like the 1800s. Okay. But she was kidnapped and then, you know, held for ransom. Well, the father wouldn't pay it because she was a female.
Oh, and my not God. As,
yes. And so the people, her kidnappers were like, well, you're of no use to us. And, you know, instead of saying go away, they killed her anyway, just to piss off her father. So,
wow.
Yeah. So that was a really harsh sort of.
Yeah. So that makes sense. If you've carried out that mm-hmm. over of this horrible experience that happened mm-hmm. to you for the sole fact that you had money.
Yep.
Then you're like in this, like, I'm not doing that again.
Screw that money.
Yeah. And then in this life, you're like, what? I was broke.
Yes. And people would make, romantically, they would make vows of like celibacy or chastity or vows to like never love again or to never leave, which we talked about that a little bit. But, mm-hmm. You know, and that just keeps us energetically connected, you know, to those cords of attachment that, you know, they keep us from having a fulfilling relationship. So a lot of people are like, you know, why can't I find love? You know, what's the problem? Why do all my relationships suck? You know, and then we look at, well, do you have any cords? You know,
yes.
Do you have any cords or vows, or have you made any vows?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And then there are so many other ways though, too, just to create cords with people mm-hmm. in this life. As well.
So many ways to create chords. Yeah. Yeah. Let me see if there's, well, you know, we talked about the vow of poverty. But okay. So here's the cool thing about these vows though, is that everybody has free will and everybody has a choice. Okay. Yes. So, you know, once we identify these vows or these oaths, we have the choice to be able to release them, and then replace them with a new belief. And so, you know, that's a technique that you can learn, but it's not just the class that I'm teaching. But it's also, there's tons of books out there. There's resources and there's a bunch of different, ways to do that through energy work. It's typically energy work and visualization. So your journey to soul retrieval, it was more, were you having a visualization or
she was.
So what mm-hmm. were you doing?
I was laying down.
Laying down.
Okay. I was laying down and she put me essentially through a trance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it was energy work, I mean, yes. so mm-hmm. to speak, right? Okay, yeah.
Yes.
And that's really, that's something that, I mean, that's sort of how it's done, you know, is through energy work. Anytime I've taken anybody into the City of Souls, that's how we do it, is a visual.
How does the City of Souls work?
So, all right. So the City of Souls is like a soul retrieval journey where we reclaim the parts of ourself that we deny and we banish because we're unable to forgive ourselves at the time of our death.
Okay.
So, you know how you were talking about how the soul breaks off?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So yep. this is a little bit different. So these pieces that break off, they're not able to travel with us back to, you know, what we consider to be heaven, quote unquote, whatever you want to call it, the other side,
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
because they are not a vibrational match for that dimension or realm.
Okay.
Why? Because we have rejected this aspect of ourselves as not divine.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it has to go someplace. So it goes into the City of Souls.
Okay.
And what it is, okay, whenever I've taken people through it, it's like, it's a guided meditation and there's lots of visualization, and I have them visualize sort of this cityscape at night. There's zero light. The only way that you can see it is because you can see the slight difference between the dark blue sky, the starless dark blue sky, and then uh-huh. the blackness of the city. And then I have people look for the light. Someplace in that cityscape, you're going to see a tiny flicker of light.
Uh-huh.
It's a candlelight in a window. And that's what we follow. And so I guide them through this visualization to see, you know, we'll go down streets and past rivers. It's a really cool process. And wow. 90% of the time I'm able to see what they see. And I think that's where the telepathy comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then they find their soul and then they relive, they explain the situation that it's in. Like one soul, I remember somebody I guided, she was chained to a wall. So I guided her, you know, through that process. And then, the cool thing, I'm trying to remember, that's why I'm hesitating here. I'm trying to remember specifically, but, why it's okay. So it's basically, why are they chained to the wall? Why are we not a vibrational match? Because, okay, so basically specific acts that we have committed in our past, right? Mm-hmm. That cause trauma, like murder, rape, or incest, or something horrible like that, or being the victim of these acts and then consciously believing that we deserve to experience that trauma or act or violence at the time of our passing. That is another way that's how that soul, like, separates.
Mm-hmm.
So usually when we'll come across the person, they will somehow be punished or incarcerated or reliving the same loop in that City of Souls.
Oh, wow. Right. Wow.
Yeah. It's intense. And I only do it in person, and I haven't done it. Gosh. And like, I haven't done one in like a year.
Mm-hmm.
And typically I do it with my friend Kathy, who is a member of the group. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just because it's so intense, but here's the cool part. Here's the, like, where the soul returns. It's the process involves sort of getting the person to look you in the eye, to look me in the eye, in order for them to finally see their own divinity. Okay.
Okay.
And it's kind of creepy. The first time I was like, what am I seeing? Because their eyes are the most beautiful, brightest blue, but it's like this, there's this beautiful blue light coming through the back and out the front of their eyes. And when they can look at me and see that, that means that they're seeing their own divinity.
Wow.
And then that's when the soul piece comes back. And there's a whole other process too. They have to go like to this council for cleansing and all this other stuff, but it's a really cool process. And when she taught it to me, I was like, what? This is the craziest thing.
Wow. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I would love to do that.
Yes. Let's do it. do you have a piece of soul that needs to be found? I mean, you don't really need to have one, I think.
I just want to go there. Can we just, can we just be like,
we absolutely can. I mean, so there, I know that there were some rules about it with Kathy, but with me, it was kind of like, well, I don't have those rules. And I'm like, why? And she's like, that's just how you see it. So, but that's when I first started working with my archangel. Everybody has an archangel that they work with, and I met mine, and it was Azrael. And I was a little bit like, why do I have to work with the angel of death? I why can't I get Michael or Raphael or whatever? And he's like, it's death and transformation. So so that's when I first met him. And actually, to get into the City of Souls, he actually lifts me up over the gates, which is really cool too. So
that's cool.
It's a cool process. I guess I forgot about how cool it is because I never do it. Very rarely do I do it.
That's very cool.
But I guess I kind of forgot about it until we made this topic. So
yeah, the soul retrieval process is similar but different, but you create a safe space, you call in the four corners and the center to create the safe space for you to journey, and then you journey either through, usually through breath work, and then you're traveling either to the upper world, the middle world, or the underworld to retrieve the lost soul pieces.
So I've done a shamanic journey before. Yes. And I've been to all of the worlds, and don't they say, don't go to the middle world. You're not supposed to go there.
Oh, I don't know exactly what the rule is on that one.
I'm pretty sure. So if any of the shamanic practitioners out there have any insight, please let us know, because I was told you're not supposed to go to the middle world because that's like Bardo. And I remember I went there one time and I was like, I don't know how to get out of here.
Oh, yeah, that's scary. Yeah, Erica goes into each one of them in her book. I don't believe she, like, anything is out of reach necessarily, but I want to check. No, because she actually gives you breath work and hand mudras to use in order to travel to each specific one. But no, it's not like, no, don't go there.
No, see, that's how different practitioners are. That's right. Why it's so cool and interesting.
But I think with our fives, with our the soul urge number fives, I think we do better with people who aren't so restrictive. I think
when you
give us a bunch of rules and we're like, but why?
Oh, you have a point. So I probably went there on purpose subconsciously because I was told not to. That's probably true, right? Don't tell me what to do.
I'm to it anyway.
right. So do you have a past life that you like, other than that one, where you feel like you may have had a soul retrieval, like one that is waiting to be retrieved?
Just to backtrack a little bit, there's so many ways for us to like dig into these things, right?
Yes.
So the one that I found, and I haven't told her yet, so I don't know if she listens to this. This is not just finding out. But I went into my Akashic records, and I wanted to find out my life with my sister, my last life with my sister. And in it, I saw that we were like some kind of geishas, and and we lived together, we worked together, but she was abused. But I was like her caretaker. Like I looked out for her. I needed to take care of her, which is very interesting because when she was born, I've seen videos of myself recently, like of me with her when she was baby. Mm-hmm. And I was 7-8 years old, and I was like her second mother for no reason.
Her like, caretaker, it's playing out again.
It was weird, like for no reason, because my parents were, we have both parents, and my parents were good parents. My parents, you know, it wasn't like I stepped in because somebody, you know, wasn't doing their thing. But it's funny how, that comes back around because you haven't resolved it.
Yeah. Yes. Hey, so that would be a cool one.
Yeah. Yeah. So that one.
I have a gypsy, and boy, she was a character. She was a gypsy grifter. Mm-hmm. She was not a cool person. She cheated money. She cheated people out of their money by telling them that they had been cursed and that she was the only one that could help them. Okay. I'm not going to lie. I think it's kind of funny because
It's like, bitch. That's like red flag number one. If you ever go to a reader or a person and they tell you, hey, you got this thing on you, but nobody else can help you except for me, or a la Trump, like right. nobody else can fix it except for me.
Only I alone can help you.
Ridiculous. No.
Right.
Run.
So when I remembered that, or I revealed that past life or re-experienced it, I kind of laughed like, bitch. Right. Okay. So, but I got mine. Okay. Cause I got busted because I was taking all these people's money and they're like, you know?
Yeah.
And so they threw me down in this hole in the ground. It was like 20 feet deep. It was this huge hole and I landed in it. And then I eventually died like of my injuries and dehydration and starvation, because that was it. It's like, go in the hole, you're done. Right.
Wow.
I didn't care about anything. Like I was done. That was, you know, and so it was a horrible death. And so I vowed, you know, that I would never, ever, at least basically, I remember that I blamed the money and I blamed feeling about money the way that I did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that I would never, ever, ever do that again. But then I also banished a piece of my soul to the City of Souls that later needed to be forgiven and retrieved. And so Kathy helped me to do that. But
okay.
For the money, I had to work with my abundance guide to work through that, as well as getting that, retrieving that soul piece. So it was a big whole thing. I kept cursing. And then, but I have another past life that relates to it too, that it was an emperor who was just the most horrible person ever, but I was locked in my own cell with the very people that I would lock in the cell, and then forced them to starve and all of that. So I've had several starvations, past lives, which I think might contribute to my current fluffiness. So I'm going to have a soul retrieval to get that shit back.
That would really make sense though, right? Because if in a past life you did not have a lot of food, and then in this life, you know, if you're a modern American with access to a high amount of calories at very, very easily at your disposal, then it's makes sense.
Absolutely. Well, and of course there's so many other reasons for it, you know, in the Akasha, just why people have any eating disorders or, you know, but starvation is a huge one, where, because famine was just a way of life in, you know, many, 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 centuries of American, or not American, but just living on earth. And so a lot of people, cause right now we have an obesity epidemic. So, you know, it's duality. You have to know one side of it to know the other, and then you need to find balance with that. So
makes sense.
It's
makes
very
sense.
Interesting.
Yeah. I've never asked you this before, but, is there some kind of correlation in, I don't know, your karma or something in your next life when you die in a painful way, or like, and slowly in your one life, like, does that like affect you, or is that like a way to like repent, or like, what is that?
Well, no, it's all about experience. So it can, you know, so for instance, in that instance, you might want to look at karma. Okay. So if you're dying a very slow, painful death, number one, the spiritual knowledge that you're going to get from that is very valuable to the spirit, right? But also you're experiencing something. It's the actual experience of experiencing the pain, the suffering, you know, all of that. That's also going to be a very knowledgeable. So if you've never experienced a slow, painful death, once you do and you pass over, you're like, okay, I've experienced that. So it just contributes to the greater, you know, karma isn't punitive. And so I don't know that while we might experience terrible, horrible, you know, experiences as humans, and the things that we do to each other are terrible and horrible, there's no coming back and re-experiencing it except for the I guess the experience of duality, one side and the other side.
Sure. Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
That's a good question though. Cause you know, who'd write a slow, painful death for themselves?
Like, yeah. Why? But I don't know. I know I've heard, like, you know, people talk about all sorts of different ways they write deaths for themselves, like getting hit by a train.
Yeah. Which would be quick, hopefully.
Yeah. I imagine so. So, yeah. So there are different ways to to access the past, we've already talked about that, like the different ways to access the past lives. When you access those, sometimes you can encounter these traumas that live in there. It's like you said though, right? It's usually the information that comes up, it's what you need to know now, because it's what you're going through now or how it's affecting you now. But as far as releasing this kind of stuff, so we talked about the City of Souls. So is that considered the quantum alignment? Is that what that is?
No. What's the quantum alignment?
Quantum alignment sessions is like another way to...
Oh yeah, I remember hearing about those. Someone here local in Portland gives those. Okay. I'm not sure what those are. I haven't done my research into those, but they're a type of energy work. Now, but soul retrieval is really, I think it's any all energy. Yeah,
I think that's actually just a fancy word for the same thing.
Yeah,
I mean, really. Yeah. Because if you're thinking of quantum, that's timelines, or beyond timelines, and then aligning is just, again, we're just going into the place and pulling out the soul piece, mm-hmm. right? So that's soul retrieval. So there's soul retrieval. Also, some shamanic workers do illuminations, which is probably exactly what you were talking about, where you go into the City of Souls and you look for the light. It's an illumination. There are also, I've heard of stories of people just through breath work. Breath work can be so powerful because it does put you in a trance if you're doing it, you know, if you're doing it in a certain way that you can go through essentially a soul retrieval process when you're doing breath work.
I've never done breath work before, and it is something that I really want to try. I want to find a practitioner to walk me through it.
Yeah. So Erica goes through several methods in her books. And so I know several that she's taught me. I use a couple just before every meditation, and it just really helps me just like get in the zone.
Wow. But
yeah, they're very, very powerful.
Yeah. Well, I know I do deep breathing, and I've done, you know, I take people through like this deep breathing mini exercise before each Akashic session, but like to legitimately have like one of those out of body, amazing life altering breath work sessions that people talk about, you know, where they have all of this release and everything. I've never had that before. So I've never had an official breath work session done by like a breath work practitioner. So it's definitely something that I want to try, but I also want to be able to do it myself because I mean,
yeah, I think it's one of those things though. Like once you go and you practice with a practitioner, you can just learn the methodology.
Yeah.
And do it yourself.
Like anything for sure. Which can that kind of be the ultimate goal anyway?
Sure.
Yeah. You know,
yeah. Although when it's a community thing though, too, I think people feed off of that, which is cool. Like I enjoy that as well.
Like it's, the energy of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool topic.
Yeah. So next week we're going to talk about planets.
Ooh, next week is a good one, guys.
Yeah. So actually I didn't go too much into it because part of the, you know, the in-between sessions that in between work that I did, in between my first soul retrieval session and the last one where my soul piece came back, I did do work with plant medicines. So that's something that I'm willing to share with everyone.
So because next week we're going to talk about
plant medicines,
connecting. We're going to talk about connecting to spirit. Okay. Spirit, spirit guides, guardians, angels, meditation, whatever, using plant medicines. I'm going to talk about cannabis because honestly, that's the only one I have any experience with, but okay. Fiora is going to talk about, plant meds, which, you know, she's had the cool experience like with ayahuasca and what else?
Wachama and mushrooms and hape.
Oh, so, I've done mushrooms too.
There you go. So,
okay. But I've never done anything spiritual. I've always just really tried to exist because that's those things are stupid and they turned me into a blithering idiot.
It's like me and cannabis. And
I remember somebody was asking, we were camping and one of my friends was like, you have to keep an eye on, you know, so-and-so. It was his wife. And I'm like, okay. Uh-huh. Right. right? And then, you know, like an hour later, he's like, where is she? And I'm like, dude, I'm trying to exist here on my chair right now. I don't have time to think about where she is. Oh my God. And I remember he was so pissed the next day. And I was like, I was on shrooms. What do you want?
Yeah.
I make no apologies.
If you're gonna do that and you expect a person to be, you know, the babysitter or whatever, they can't also be on the stuff. Like, that's not how it works. You need a sober person to be the lookout.
It was so stupid. And you know where she was, which cracked me up because I eventually found her. They were in the woods and they had branches sticking out of the backs of their trees. And they were like having a tree fairy marriage. I'm not even kidding. It was the most ridiculous thing ever. And I'm just like, I guess this is what I'm doing now. So it was super fun. It was last time I did it. It was super fun. It was about 10 plus years ago. And I have all my memories to take with me because I really probably won't ever do it again.
Yeah. Well, my experiences are nothing like that. So
good. You can tell us about them next week.
We'll talk about it next week. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us today.
Stay mystical, stay magical, and ready to do again next week. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with a friend.
And you can find us on all the socials under Esoterics Podcast. Please be sure to join our Facebook group, The Woke Akashic, to hear firsthand about our classes and our events, and as well as getting intuitive development tips for and the free monthly moon meditations. Yeah, and so much more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There's lots to do in there. So please join us.
Thank you, guys.
Bye, guys. Thanks.
Bye.